Welcome to the Live Like It's True podcast, where we look at some of the most interesting and astonishing stories of the Bible and ask, how can we live like this story is true? I'm your host, Shannon Popkin. I'm an author, a speaker, and a Bible teacher. And here on the podcast, I'm inviting you to drink deeply of the true story of the Bible and live like it's true. I'm so excited to tell you about my two new books launching this spring. And here in the podcast, I'll be hosting two series in correlation with each of these books. So first, we'll do the Sarah series, and we'll look at the life of Sarah in Genesis 12 through 21, which is the topic of my brand new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. I love this story of the Bible, and I can't wait to dive in with you, both in the pages of this new book and here on the podcast. My second book launching is Comparison Girl for Teens. So excited about this book, co-authored by my dear friend, Lee Nienhuis. We poured our hearts into this super fun and truth-packed resource that we know is going to help so many teens find freedom from the comparison trap. So here on the podcast, we'll be doing a comparison series, looking at how Jesus compared in a completely different way. I hope that every one of these amazing conversations will inspire you to better know the story, share the story, and live like the story is true. In these early episodes of the Sarah series, I'm talking with four women whose stories were highlighted in my new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises. I'll be weaving thoughts from throughout Sarah's story, found in Genesis 12 through 21, into these conversations. And then later on in the series, we'll return to our more typical format and talk through Sarah's story scene by scene. I just know you're going to want to hear each one of these conversations with Bible teachers, Courtney Doctor, Ann Swindell, Carol Kent, and others. And so let's jump into our conversation for today. Jill Savage, welcome to Live Like It's True.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's such a blessing to have you to talk about this really important topic. And you and I got to meet, I think, the first time at the Speak Up conference. Is that right?
Or was it when you were on Family Life?
Yes. I don't remember which came first, but yeah.
I don't either. Yeah, it was right about the same time there, yes. I think.
Yeah, we got to have lunch with
Bob Lapine.
Yes. Yep. So that was great. That's such a great ministry. Yep. And so give us just a snapshot of, I'll read your bio here in just a second, but give us a snapshot of what you're doing right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've really been in women's ministry for almost 30 years, led a ministry to moms for 24 of those years. But over the last 7 years, my husband and I have primarily been doing marriage ministry. Our marriage experienced an incredible redemption. We healed from that, and we, you know, really thought life would continue on the way it was, but became very obvious that God was using our pain for his purposes and turning our story really into the next season of ministry. So we primarily do marriage ministry. I find it incredibly fulfilling. We both do. We love, love, love what we do. So we do online marriage courses. We do online marriage coaching. We just started training marriage coaches. Wow. Probably our favorite thing to do is our marriage 2.0 intensives. So that's when a couple comes to our home. We spend 3 days with them and just dig into their dynamics, their stuff, and help them to create a 2.0 marriage. And we love what we're doing.
I want to come. I want my husband and I to come. I mean,
it's so really fun
right now, but I love that. So, all right, sign me up. We'll talk after. But to give our listeners a wider view of who you are, you're an author, a speaker, you're passionate about encouraging families. The co-author of 14 books, Jill. I mean, I am like in the final stretch of writing this book that that this podcast is based on. 14, girl, that is a lot of books. And so the book that we're going to, maybe our listeners would be most interested in getting after this conversation, is No More Perfect Marriages. Mm-hmm. You've got No More Perfect
Moms,
No More
Perfect Kids,
and then No More Perfect Marriages. I love that you're just my
not perfect friend. You know?
Yes. Well, you know, a lot of times people are like, 14 books. I'm like, well, I only write about my mess ups. I only write about my lessons learned. And I said, so there's about 100 more to come.
There you
but,
go.
You know, that just means I've just messed up a whole lot.
Well, and, but we're not everybody is willing to share their mess ups with the rest of the world. So
that's true.
It's a messy life. And I'm just so grateful for your vulnerability and your wisdom and how God has allowed you to be faithful through these different hardships. I mean, it's by His grace that you have continued. And so the rest of us, your sisters, we want to follow in your footsteps. We want to do what you have done. And most of all, we want to live like it's true. Like that's the name of this podcast. We want to live like it's true. We want to live like God's word, His promises will come to fruition. So this book that I've been working on is, I think my publisher will use the title I'm proposing, you know, one never knows, right?
But right.
I've called it Shaped by the Promise, and it's tracing the story of Sarah in Genesis 12 through 21. So the part of Sarah's story that I want to kind of put in the backdrop as I talk with you today, Jill, it's a marriage story. Mm-hmm. And it comes like way toward the end of Sarah's story in the Bible. So she and Abraham have now been following God for probably about 23 or 24 years at this point. And, you know, they're nomads. They go from place to place. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they live in tents, they pick up their tent pegs and they move. And so they are moving to a new place called Gerar. And in this place, Abraham chooses to commit an old sin. So they're entering this city and he tells everybody that Sarah is his sister. And, you know, to us, we might wonder, like, why would you be motivated to lie like that? Like, what's the motivation? Well, there was a lot at risk because apparently Abraham knows that in this part of the world, people will kill you and take your wife. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was beautiful. She was, they were foreign. They weren't as used to foreign people living in their spaces. And so she would have been like a trophy bride. And so, you know, he was afraid that people would kill him and take her. And so he devised this plan so that they would come to him instead of through him. You know, so they would come to him. She's his sister, and they would try to negotiate a bride price. And then maybe, you know, he could stretch things out until it was time to leave for a new place. So they come to this city, Gerar, and he is thinking, hey, we'll just do what we always did. I'll just lie like I've always lied. Mm-hmm. And so he calls her his sister. But the thing that he doesn't bargain on is, you know, kings don't barter. They just take what they want. And so the king of Gerar, his name is Abimelech, or maybe that's sort of a title for him. He takes Sarah. She is taken. And I'm sure this was a surprise to both of them. We learn later in the text that they've been doing this at every city that they come to for the past 23 years. They've been pretending she's his sister. She goes along with that. I don't think she really had a choice, but I don't think they really counted this being a risk. It was a surprise. She was taken. Mm-hmm. And so now she is in a very challenging situation, a place where like there's probably so much fear. And so I just want, you know, that surprise of being taken. Mm-hmm. I want that to be the backdrop when we talk about your story, Jill, because mm-hmm. I picture there was a moment of like you were just taken. Like this mm-hmm. was surprising, and it had to do with a husband who should have known better, mm-hmm. who had followed God for a long time, a number of years, like Abraham. I mean, he'd been following God. He knew better, and yet he fell into an old sin.
Yeah.
And you, like Sarah, were affected by your husband's sin. So take us to that moment where you first were taken by this difficult situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as you shared, you know, my husband had followed the Lord for a long time, had been a pastor for 20 years. But the last 10 years of ministry had been really challenging for him, and he was pretty worn out. He was pretty beat up. And so in 2010, he made a decision to leave ministry, church ministry. Mm-hmm. And he helped out at Hearts at Home for a little while, but then he also launched his own construction business. But little did we know that how much his identity had been wrapped up in pastoring. He would have told you it wasn't, but when it went away, it really became an issue. And he also just was experiencing a lot of disillusionment in life, in his faith. And so all of that was kind of swirling around inside of him. And I knew he was struggling, but I didn't know to the extent that he was struggling. By the summer of 2011, I could feel him just really disengaging. I couldn't put my, I thought, okay, he has struggled with depression in the past. So this is just a dark season for him. We're going to get to the other side of it, until I discovered a conversation on his phone with someone from his past. And immediately I thought, wow, this is a really familiar conversation. And so I questioned him about it, and he was like, no, it's just, she's going through a divorce. I'm just helping her through it. It's not a big deal. And I was like, well, you know, we always loop each other in on this stuff, so we probably need to do that. He agreed, but it ended up just going underground. So it started out as an emotional affair. Several months later, I'd been at a speaking engagement, came home. He had literally fallen asleep with his phone in his hands. And I thought, well, that's odd. And I just pick it up to plug it in, not even thinking. And I look at the conversation on the screen and I realize, oh, this has actually become a full-on affair. And my world just dropped. I mean, my stomach dropped. I was sick to my stomach. I was like, I was taken for sure, because that is not what I thought my life was going to look like in any way, shape, or form.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Ah. And for those who are listening, who are identifying with that moment, that discovery, that sick to your stomach moment, I think all of us, to some extent, we have those moments where we're surprised by somebody else's sin, and it hurts so deeply.
It does.
And I'm so sorry. But yet, you know, like you gave us a glimpse, there's going to be a story of redemption here. But it was not immediate, right? It was not.
Oh, no. It was not immediate. No. Thankfully, we actually had a counseling appointment the very next day. And I thought to myself, I think that I need to confront him in the counselor's office.
Okay.
I mean, it just seemed like the most logical thing to do. And
did you sleep that night, like that night after you found his phone?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question, Shannon. I had a girlfriend who, she's my best friend, and she knew that Mark was not in a good place. And she really has strong discernment too. Like every time she would be at my house, she would just say, Jill, it is so dark. It is just not good. And I'm like, I know, Beck, I know. And so she had said to me so many times, Shannon, you know what, Jill, I'm leaving my phone on if you need me 24 hours a day. If you need me in the middle of the night, I just want you to know my phone's on. And I'm like, Becky, I'm not going to need you in the middle of the night. And she's like, I know, but if you need it, I just want you to know. Well, it was 1 a.m. when I discovered that. So the first thing I did was I called my friend Becky. I mean, we just cried and prayed and cried and prayed. And I was on the phone with her for probably 2 hours. And I'm so grateful for her presence in my life. I was so grateful for her discernment.
Yeah, everybody needs a Becky.
I know.
We all need to. If you don't have a Becky, go get you a Becky, you know, because you're going to need your Becky, right?
You are. And, you know, a lot of times what happens is we realize the gaps in our friendships when we get into crisis. We have to build up our friendships before we get into crisis.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, I was so grateful. I did not hardly sleep at all that night, needless to say. And the next day when we went to counseling and I I communicated. I was met with anger. I was met with just a hard heart. And honestly, I was like, I don't know this man. This is not the man I married. He was like, yeah, I'm having an affair and I'm not stopping.
Wow.
And I mean, it was really scary. And so our counselor actually separated us and said, I'd really like to talk to you each individually. And so he had Mark go out to the waiting room first. And I just crumbled. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I have no idea. And he said, you know, Jill, if he's willing to get help, then I think that, you know, he can stay. But if he is unwilling to get help, I think you need to ask him to leave. Mm-hmm. And so I just was overwhelmed with the pain of it, the confusion of it. And so,
can I interject here a second? Mm-hmm. I think it's so difficult when there is such disparity.
Yes.
Between someone you thought you knew when you married him, you thought you were marrying a fellow follower of God. And yet there's this great dip in his character. And I mean, when I'm thinking of Abraham, and we see this, like this, you know, I'm making motions with my hands.
He's up
on a mountain with faith. He's down in a valley. He's up in a mountain. Like in the chapter before this, we see Abraham, he's on this mountain with God and he's looking down at Sodom, or I guess it's chapter 18. He's looking down at Sodom and he's praying for these people and he's interacting with God. I mean, he is called God's friend. He just had lunch with God. I mean, this mountaintop experience. You would never guess, and I think it's probably only a couple of weeks later. Now, in your story, this is more of an expanded time frame, but Abraham, it's like he takes the elevator from the penthouse all the way down to the basement of his faith.
Yep.
And he forgets everything. He's acting as if there is no God. And I think that disparity, like that is frightening.
It is.
As a wife, right?
It is. But you said something earlier when you were talking about the deception, and you said they were going into these cities and he lied like he always lied. Mm-hmm. Well, when you get to the redemption part of our story, you know, one of the things that Mark came to understand is that deception had ruled his life since childhood. And you know, there were dynamics in his childhood that told him he didn't have a voice. And there were dynamics in his childhood that told him that you just smile and look good and just, you know, shut yourself down because it doesn't matter. So ultimately, he had gotten to this place of this disparity because of the lies that he had believed since he was a young child. And so in essence, you know, even throughout our marriage, so at this point, we've been married 28 years. And so even throughout our marriage, he had been terribly dishonest. And I'm not talking about that he was deceiving me. I'm saying that he would say yes to my face. And then in behind the scenes, he would say no on the inside.
Right.
And so therefore, what that builds is that builds bitterness. That builds resentment, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, this disparity that I'm seeing, I don't understand at the moment what's going on. But when we were able to go back and, in essence, do an autopsy on Mark 1.0 and marriage 1.0, we were able to identify that he never felt like he had a voice. And he had learned to deceive at an early age just to make things, just to survive. Mm-hmm. And so he carried that into adulthood and into marriage unknowingly.
Right. You know, I just hear you emphasizing deception, like what a dangerous thing it is to deceive ourselves and to deceive others, to deceive ourselves about our deception, right?
Yes, like, right.
When we look at Abraham lying, I can almost feel like a compassion, like, well, yeah, I might lie too, you know, like in that situation. But God holds him accountable here. He is this man of faith. He is like this faith pioneer, this walk by faith pioneer. And God is showing Abraham, look, you can tell the truth and you can trust me. And I'm not going to let you get away with this deception. We need to be honest about where you lack faith. And we need to be honest, you know, to the world, like that you trust in me, not yourself. I think really there's a lot of self-reliance in deception, isn't there?
There's
a lot of like, I got to take care of me.
Yep.
And I'm not going to trust you. I'm not going to trust God. I'm going to do what it takes. I think there's a whole bunch of reasons for deception. But I want to just interject a question because, you know, we are talking about marriage and you are a marriage coach. So a lot of women that I talk to wonder that if their husband is being deceptive, you know, they don't know, they don't have tangible proof. What advice do you give? Like, let's say there's a wife whose husband will not allow her to see his phone. You know, he hides it, you know, and he gets mad if she asks, like your husband had the phone right there in his hand. What advice do you give about like, if you're concerned that deception is part of your marriage? God's promises are like a set of parentheses. The first one is when he makes the promise. The second one is when he keeps it. And you never have one without the other. But often there's this long stretch between the two, much longer than we first imagined, right? That's what we see in Sarah's story found in Genesis 12 through 21. God promised a son, but in this wide stretch between the parentheses, she wondered, would God keep his promises? Could he? I'm Shannon Popkin, inviting you to come find the answer to those questions, both for Sarah and yourself, in my brand new 6-week Bible study titled Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. Find out how you too can be shaped by God's promises in the waiting.
Yeah, well, I think that the first and the most important thing is to not make it about you, because even if it is there, and I understand that then it is about you because, you know, there's
it affects you,
yeah. but oftentimes what will happen is we will make it about us. Mm. He's rejecting me. Mm. He's keeping this from me. And yes, that those are true statements, but the reason he's doing it is most likely because of it's a reflection of his own fears in his life, his own struggles. And yes, it could he be hiding something? It's possible. But I would say at that point, your biggest job is prayer is the work. Mm. Prayer is the work, because it's like what is in the dark needs to be brought to the light. Mm. And the Lord has ways of doing that you're not even aware of.
So I
think a lot of times we go into control mode.
Yeah.
Like we've got to control that. And I've got to find out what it is that he's hiding from me and all of that. But the Lord will open whatever door. If you need access to his phone, you're going to find it laying somewhere one day, and then that's going to be the result of prayer.
Yeah. I endorse everything you just said. I had an experience, Jill, when one of my kids was going through a really hard time, and I was worried that there was deception. I was worried. I was so afraid of what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But I just was convinced, and this was when I was writing my book, Control Girl.
Of course.
So God was dealing with control in my life, you know, and this was the number one thing that I could not control, this situation. And I remember praying one day and God saying, go check the backpack. I did not hear a tangible voice or anything like that, but I just was impressed by God, go check the backpack. And I never did that. I was not a mom who ever checked, I have to say, because I want to model well. And I think phones with teenagers parents should have some access to those phones.
Absolutely. Until they're paying for it themselves.
Exactly. When you're paying for the bill, I just think there's so many landmines. And so with our kids, we would occasionally check their phone. We would do spot checks. Okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't ever go through their rooms or their backpacks. I just wasn't that mom. So, but this particular instance, I went and checked the backpack and I found something. It opened doors and it was a pathway to healing.
Yes.
And
I have no doubt that was a result of prayer. That was, yeah.
And just praying. I love that you said prayer is the work, because prayer is not doing nothing. I think sometimes we think that prayer, like, we're just not going to do anything, but we're going to pray. Well, no, prayer is doing something. Prayer is doing the most important thing. On my very first episode of Live Like It's True, we had Kelly Needham and we talked about this story. And I have gone back to this story so many times in my mind. I think it was such a powerful image. It's the story of the paralytic and how his four friends brought him to Jesus and they dug through the roof. And so when we were talking about how do we apply this, like, how do we get our friends to Jesus? Like, how do we dig through the roof? And it's prayer. Like, prayer, you know, those four friends, they weren't doing anything else that day. They canceled everything that they had going on.
Yep.
And so what if for this person that we're concerned they're deceiving us or something dark is going on, what if we cancel all our plans for that day and dig through the roof and get that friend to Jesus? Like, prayer is the way that we do that.
Yep.
So I love that you've emphasized that. All right. So you know, you're in the counselor's office, you're talking through, you know, you're kind of tracing back, okay, how did we get to this place? So what came next? Did you ask Mark to leave?
No, he actually, when the counselor met with him, the counselor asked him to actually go to a men's event, every man's battle event, and asked him if he would be willing to do that. And he was willing.
Okay.
So we took that as he was willing to at least make some efforts at figuring out what was going on inside of him. So at that point, I felt like I didn't have to, because he was willing to get help. But unfortunately, it got worse before it got better. And so it was back and forth, and he would recommit to the marriage, and then that would last for a few weeks, and then he would go back to the relationship and he would recommit and go back. And
while he was living with you, or was he moving out?
Okay. No, that was, he was still at home during that time. And, but several months later, he actually moved out. And indicated that he would be filing for divorce and that he was moving on. So at that point, our children didn't know. But when Mark moved out, I had to tell them. They knew, their words were, we knew Dad was off. We knew something wasn't right. We just didn't know what it was. And so, and three of them were in their 20s, grown out of the house. Two were still teenagers at home. All five, absolutely heartbroken. Absolutely heartbroken.
Are these, who's living at home, boys or girls?
Two boys.
Friend, I can just tell you that when I had two teenage boys in my home, if I would have had to do that without my husband, that would have been hard. I always say that I was the primary parent when they were little. He was the primary parent when they were teenage boys and they weren't listening to their mama anymore. Like, was that was that hard for you?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh my goodness. In fact, there was a scenario one night where our son, he had a friend spend the night. And they decided to sneak out and drive the car to McDonald's. And it had a light out, like a rear light out, the car did. And so they got pulled over by a police officer. So at 3 a.m., I have this kid standing over me and he says, Mom, we sort of like snuck out and we sort of got in trouble because the light was out on the car, and there's sort of a police officer downstairs.
Was he old enough to drive?
Yeah, he was.
Okay,
he was.
Okay.
But I remember saying, I sort of hope you're kidding me. Said, you know, I sort of wish I was.
Oh, when they're little, and I just remember the moments when you're asleep and you feel their hot breath and you're like, I threw up, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's that. Yeah. But this is just a whole nother level. Mom,
oh, totally.
I sort of have a police officer. But once again, Jill, what I'm noticing is we don't have to rely on ourselves to catch the kids, you know, when they need to be caught. God can handle that with a broken taillight, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, so yeah, I have to deal with that on my own. And I do remember being so angry at my husband that night.
Yeah.
You know, of you have left me to deal with this stuff alone.
Yeah, you're over there with her. And exactly. I'm here with these kids that we agreed to raise together. Mm-hmm. You're there. Mm-hmm. I'm here. You don't have to be woken up. There's so many seeds for bitterness to grow in a situation.
Oh, my goodness. There really is. And this is where, Shannon, the only way I survived this was God's truth.
Well, come back next time because we're going to hear the redemption part of Jill's story. And it is an amazing story of what God has done. But I hope that you're going to want to open your Bible and find some of God's promises to cling to yourself for your time of waiting. In this new Bible study that I've written, Shaped by God's Promises, what we see is that God introduces himself as a promise-making God. He makes promises and he keeps promises. And often, though, there is this long stretch in the middle, and that's where we are shaped by his promises. So grab a copy of that book. Jill's story is highlighted along with three others who have been here on the podcast. So grab a copy. It's called Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. We're going to be digging into the scriptures together and find out how to live like it's true, that our God is a faithful God who keeps his promises. Can I just remind you that each of these stories from the Bible is absolutely true? Rather than giving us a list of facts to memorize about himself, God gave us a book filled with stories, and each one helps us to know him and to understand this overarching story that we are all in. So I hope that you'll take some time looking at this story in your Bible. To help you study, I've put together my free Live Like It's True workbook, which includes my false narratives watch list, my story elements bookmark, and more. Live Like It's True is part of the Resound Podcast Network. For more gospel-centered resources, visit resoundmedia.cc. We've got that link for you, along with links to any of the other resources that we've mentioned in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining me. And now it's time to go live like it's true.